You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
I'm joined live in studio by Alan Blackman from Auckland University of Technology, and we've got some interesting stuff on Dear Science today. So we touched on this briefly. So if you are holding a sandwich right now, maybe put it down, because recent studies have shown that feces transplants can actually affect someone's mood and even ease psychiatric disorders.
Yeah. what can I say about this? Well, I guess one of the great things about doing this show is I always learn stuff. And I had no idea that this was even a thing. And until I read it, I would have thought that this was a joke, but it's not. So if you were going to treat someone for bipolar disorder, the first thing you'd probably reach for is some sort of, strong psychotropic drugs or, whatever. The last thing you would reach for is poo, basically.
I feel like that's a fairly neutral statement. I don't think that would be very polarizing.
So there's a bunch of researchers at the University of New South Wales, and they have just published a study of fecal transplantation for the treatment of bipolar disorder, believe it or not. Okay.
You're joking. That's
We're crazy. Talking transplantation of poo. Okay. And you might think, okay, this must be a relatively recent thing. In fact, not. It goes all the way back to 4th century China, apparently. Yep. And they used to use fecal transplantation as treatment for diarrhea and food poisoning. How the hell they got that idea, I don't know, but they did.
Incredible.
And what's going on here? Why should this make any difference to us? And there's so much about the body that we don't know, obviously. And one of the areas of current interest is the microbiome. Okay, so all of the bugs, basically, in your gut. And, there are good bugs, there are bad bugs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But everyone's got their own sort of unique microbiome. And that seems to be a product of what we eat, our lifestyles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And things like, for example, antibiotics. Whenever you take antibiotics, they're fairly sort of destructive sort of things. And not only do they kill bad bugs, they kill good bugs as well. And so they can sort of clean out your microbiome. And, while they might treat you for the thing that you're being treated for, they can sort of cause problems in other respects. So, as I say, people have thought that, okay, maybe one way of regenerating the microbiome is to take the poo of healthy volunteers and give it to people who are lacking in this, okay? And I know. And these researchers in the University of New South Wales in Oz, and also in Switzerland as well, they have been studying the effect of poo on moods. And specifically, the folk in Australia looking at bipolar disorder, people in Switzerland looking at depression and the symptoms of depression, but very similar, I guess, things. And so the Swiss study found that when volunteers took pills laden with human poo, and get this is the best thing of the whole story, what do they call those pills? They call them crapsules.
Oh,
that is so good. That is so good. Somebody needs to trademark that. Crapsules. I love it. I love it. I love it. But when they took these crapsules, containing human poo, then their symptoms of depression were lessened, most definitely lessened, okay? And, this they're putting down to now the fact that it's obviously got something to do with the microbiome. And some sort of relationship there between your microbiome and your moods. So they've done animal trials, they've done trials on mice, and what they found with mice was that, they could breed mice with no microbiome, essentially, and they found that they were a lot more stressed than mice having the normal gut bacteria, et cetera, et cetera. And what they also found was that they took old mice who were suffering cognitive decline and fed them some poo from young mice, then that cognitive decline was arrested. Okay, so that, or at least slowed down anyway.
So mice that, you know, weren't happy, if they consumed poo of another mouse that was happy,
well, all not, of a sudden... Not so much happy, but certainly young anyway, you know, young.
Younger, and, have those gut biomes.
Yeah. And
they would be happier.
They would stop losing their their cognitive senses and everything like that.
It seems counterintuitive, because I think if I ate human feces, I would definitely be a lot unhappier. I don't know about you guys, but...
And, well, again, so they've obviously done studies in humans, and they've been looking at people with irritable bowel syndrome and looking for some sort of link. And what they found was that between 44 and 84% of people with irritable bowel syndrome also appeared to suffer from anxiety. Okay? And so there does appear to be this link between what's going on in your gut and what's going on in your brain.
Absolutely fascinating. It's just... How do people think of this?
I know. Who's the first person to go up to a patient and say, here you go, here, have some poo, you know?
So and instead of a spoonful of sugar...
No, don't say it.
I won't finish.
But no, honestly, it has got to the point over there where people are coming off their medication for bipolar disorder through being, taking these poo tablets, which... It's absolutely astonishing. And as I say, you'd think it was April the 1st today and I'm making all this up. I'm not. This is real stuff. So obviously there's a, dare I say it, shitload of work left to be done. I couldn't get away with not saying that, could I?
It's one of those days. I think that's definitely something to consider, but perhaps maybe as a last resort, if that's fair enough.
You know, if it works, then why not? I think it's incredible stuff, right? Absolutely amazing.
Moving on, because I literally cannot move on quicker enough. Now we're talking about lead exposure and IQ. So there apparently is turning out to be a link between that.
Yes. Oh, yes, very much so. Okay, so way back in 1923, a guy by the name of Cyril Midgley decided that it would be a really good idea to put lead in petrol because it made cars run a lot more smoothly. And he had this thing called tetraethyl lead, and it stopped cars knocking, which apparently is sort of pre-ignition in the cylinders or something like that. But whatever, it made cars run a lot better. And nobody really, although they should have, really realised just what an incredibly bad idea that was, putting lead in petrol. So there's been a study recently published from workers at Duke University, a very good university in the US, where they are looking at the link now between IQ and lead exposure. And in 1996, lead was finally taken out of petrol in the States. I think it was around about the same time in New Zealand as well. It might have been 96, 97, something like that. They eventually took lead out of petrol. And what they're finding is that anybody that's born in the States prior to 1996 certainly has a higher chance of, I guess we can call it cognitive decline, lead-related illnesses, so things like shrinkages of the brain, faster aging of the brain, you know, all of these nasty sort of things. Mm-hmm. And what they found, this is quite remarkable, their estimate is that a collective 824 million IQ points have been taken off around about 170 million US adults who were alive at the time.
Because of
the leaded petrol. And it's especially its exposure in kids. So if they were young kids around about the 60s and the 70s, that tended to be the really bad time for all of this.
Wow.
Speaking of somebody who was born around that time, that's not good.
And you've still got a sharp mind if you're on Dear Science.
You're too kind, Christina, goodness. And so that's what they're saying. As of 2015, over 170 million Americans had high levels of lead in their blood while they were kids. And this really is not a good thing in terms of the mental decline and stuff like that. And, you know, this is going to take a long time to pass, really.
Yeah, and it's lead exposure as a child, and now decades on, they're seeing these effects, smaller brain, lower IQ.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Yep. And, of course, remember, lead used to be in paint as well, so you'd always your undercoat would always be red lead. And so, you know, when you're sanding stuff, be careful, because you'll get, you know, all that dust from your sanding. You may well have lead based paint underneath that. So it just seems to me a little bit crazy that, you know, I think we've known that lead's not good for you for a long time. Even the Romans, you know, way back when, that's there's been talk that the Roman Empire sort of went bust because they used lead a lot in their cookware and their wine amphoras. And okay. And it actually sweetened their wine. Okay, so lead acetate is nice and sweet, and so they sort of popped that in their wine. But the really terrible thing about this guy Cyril Midgley, who thought it was a good idea to put lead in petrol, he was also the guy that invented CFCs, believe it or not.
Two for one, hey?
Yeah. He probably had more effect on the earth in the 20th century than any other individual, really.
It's crazy that,
astonishing.
Yeah, late 90s is when people suddenly realised, oh, hey, hold on, lead might not be so good. But especially when the Romans have...
Obviously too many vested interests there, but yeah.
Yeah, no, so. Fair enough. our final topic for today is interesting as well, as they always are. I'm just flattering him, so keep coming back.
It works.
So today is the anniversary of the death of a science icon in New Zealand, William Pickering. So what did he do?
Yeah, precisely. There we go. Oh. That's the thing. I mean, he's a very, very little known New Zealand scientist. And way back in the 1950s, 1960s, he was top of the world, almost literally, in fact. So, as you say, Christine, he died this day in 2004. Any of you who live on the North Shore will know possibly William Pickering Drive up on the North Shore. There's also a Mount Pickering, which is down in the Kepler Range, just sort of back of Tiana, down around there. And that was named in 2011 after this guy Pickering. Again, the majority of you listening probably don't know what he did. He was born in Wellington. He went over to the States to a little place called Caltech, which you may have heard of, which in its day was just relatively new university type college place. He did his undergraduate there. He then did a master's and a PhD there, and he ended up at a place called the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And this was sort of late in the Second World War, around about 1944 or so. And jets were totally new at that stage. They were a product really of the Second World War. He was very interested in that, and he ended up being director of the Jet Propulsion Lab in 1954. Now, those of you who know your history will know that Sputnik was launched, the first satellite, in 1957 by the Russians. And then, of course, the Americans were under great pressure to respond in kind. And I think the US Navy, first of all, tried to get a satellite up, blasting it up in a rocket. The rocket went bang on the launch pad, so they looked a bit silly. Then the Jet Propulsion Lab got involved under Pickering's tutelage, and they launched the first American satellite. So this was Explorer 1, and that was about 4 months after Sputnik went up. So this was all due to a Kiwi being the director of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Wow.
And then the Jet Propulsion Laboratory were the first people to send a probe to Venus. And so this was in 1962. Okay, and this was a probe called Mariner 2, and again, under Pickering's direction, he did that. They then sent one to Mars in 1964, and this was Mariner 4. So these were the first successes that the States had over the Russians. The Russians were first in everything, basically, until Pickering and the JPL came along the Jet Propulsion Lab.
Amazing.
And, you know, this is a Kiwi who was born in Wellington. And he made the cover of Time magazine twice in the 60s. So there you go. That means that you're really, really famous. He retired from the JPL in 1976. He got given an honorary knighthood when he retired. It was an honorary one because he became a US citizen. Having lived in the States all that time, he got given the National Medal of Science in the US. You know, that's an enormous, enormous prize. And he's far too little known, I think, in New Zealand. So go and Google him, Bill Pickering, amazing guy. And as I say, the anniversary of his death today. So somebody that we should all be very, very proud of, I think, as a country.
Little old New Zealand.
Absolutely.
Can really do anything.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that's fascinating. Oh my gosh. Very cool stuff today on Dear Science. I love this segment so much. Cool. Thank you very much for coming in, Alan.
Always a pleasure.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.